Thank you for listening to the Gamers Uplink Saturdays podcast. Visit www.gamersuplink.com for all the latest news, information, reviews, live streams, and more. That's www.gamersuplink.com.
I feel like I had unfinished business in the gaming and the retro community. I feel that the way that I left, while it was necessary, there was just stuff left undone. And that didn't sit right with me. So I said, you know, I don't want to like have any regrets. I want to be able to say I did all the things I wanted to do to the best of my ability. And if my last day comes and I know that everything I wanted to do, I did the best that I could, then I'd be okay with that. And at that point, I wasn't okay with what I had left. I said, there's like this big gap of things that I wanted to do, could still do. Now's the time to do it while I still can.
Welcome to Gamers Uplink Saturdays, the podcast where we cover the variety of gaming life. Welcome to Gamers Uplink Saturdays. If you are involved in what might have been identified as anything from the classic gaming community or the emulation scene in the late 90s and early 2000s, chances are you might have visited and downloaded an emulator from the iconic website Zophar's Domain, and might have even been lucky enough to get to know the founder, Brad, also known as Zophar. I happened to be involved in the community back then as well, and we had a lot of fun together, I'll tell you that. Well, it's been over 20 years, and lo and behold, we are all rediscovering what we might have lost. And Brad, aka Zophar, is back in the community streaming on Twitch and is here to reminisce with me about what we had and what we're looking forward to. So, Brad, welcome. And just to make things appropriate here, I have to play this intro right here.
Secure all positions. Here we go.
Da 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 da! Charge!
Full ahead. Next stop, Zophar's Domain.
Hey, George, and how you doing?
I'm good. And there we go. So it's been a while, you know?
Yes, it has.
It has, yeah. I mean, we were together back in the 90s, early 2000s. I remember that iconic show we did. And it was a lot of fun. You know, I think we loan for those times again, right? Where we could just, you know, throw caution to wind and play the games that we wanted to play, and run an emulator on our PCs and Macs, and you know, have it be as close to accurate as you want, right? But it's been a while. You know, you were the webmaster of Zophar's Domain. I was on a website, Emmy Camp, and I also had Gamers Uplink. Why did you come back? Like, tell us a story.
Sure. So when I left Zophar's Domain, this would have been back in 2000. You know, I was spending a lot of time on the website. You know, there were times where I'm waking up at like 1-2 in the morning to do news updates, and it was pretty wild. And it just got to a point where, as fun as it was and as much passion as I had for it, I wanted to get myself out in the world. I wanted to, you know, make my mark and, you know, find my family and, you know, get a house and get a car and, the whole dream. Right. And I knew I couldn't do that if I was, you know, tying myself to constantly updating the website the way that I wanted to. So I decided to, you know, pass it along, which I did do. And then I basically spent the next 20 years doing exactly that, finding my future. You know, I ended up marrying a wonderful woman from Brooklyn, New York. We have a son. He's actually going to be turning 7 very soon. And, you know, it's been a great 20 years, got a career with a great company. I've been at that same company this entire time. And, you know, all is going well. And then the pandemic hit in 2020, as we all know. Mm-hmm. And that was, and still continues to be, right, to a point. It has been very challenging. And it changed life as we know it. And for the first, I want to say, almost 2 years of the pandemic, I navigated it. you know, work became a lot more stressful for everybody, I'm sure. But especially my line of work, you know, as a manager, it became very, very stressful. And at the end of last year, someone that I worked with for a very long time, who actually used to work for me once upon a time, I stopped by my office and just, you know, chatting, stopping by, want to see how things were. And I remember, I can't remember what I was doing. I just know I believed I was very busy. And I said, hey, man, look, you know, hope you're doing well. A little busy right now, but I promise after the holidays, because the holidays are a very busy time for my line of work. I said, I promise after the holidays, you and I will catch up. We'll go, you know, talk. And I promise we'll get all caught up. You tell me all about what's been going on for, you know, the last few years. And he said, that sounds great, man. I'll see you soon. And he left, and it was the last time I ever saw him, because a few weeks later, he died of COVID-19. Less than 4 weeks later.
Right.
And, you know, and I heard news, like, you know, this happened, these people were dying, and this many deaths, and it's different when you know the person, or it hits that close, you know, home to you. So when it happened, I said, oh my God, like, I can't believe it. I literally was just, I was sitting right there. He was like, this close to me, just chatting. Now he's gone, and he was in his 50s. You know, he wasn't, you know, what I would consider to be, to me, old. And that was it. And so I realized, like, you know, this could happen at any moment, any time. I could live till I'm 100 years old, you know, knock on wood. Or tomorrow could be it for me. I could walk out in the street and that's it, get hit by a car, something crazy like that. And so, you know, and hopefully that doesn't happen, by the way.
Well, you'll probably outlive all of us, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, I got my gray hair.
It's how it works.
You still have a lot of color in your hair versus me, but I'm sorry.
I told you your hair is not gray, it's silver.
I guess.
but the bottom line was, I said, you know, I don't want to live with any regrets now. And while I set out to do, like, you know, my family and my, you know, where I live, I got myself out of Philly because I'm not a fan of city living. That's just me. And, you know, my son is amazing and he's going to grow up to be an awesome person and all this great stuff. I feel like I had unfinished business in the gaming and the retro community. I feel that the way that I left, while it was necessary, there was just stuff left undone. And I that didn't sit right with me. So I said, you know, I don't want to, like, have any regrets. I want to be able to say, I did all the things I wanted to do to the best of my ability. And if my last day comes and I know that everything I wanted to do, I did the best that I could, then I'd be okay with that. And at that point, I wasn't okay with what I had left. I said, there's like this big gap of things that I wanted to do, could still do. Now's the time to do it while I still can. You know, maybe 10 years, 15 years from now, it won't be that way anymore. I won't feel like I have the ability, the heart, the knowledge, the energy to do it. So it's gotta be now, right? I'm 41 years old. I still have energy. I still have the know. I now's the time. So what I did, what I ended up doing was I started going on Twitch. So I started looking at speedrunners because even when I was in Zofar's domain, when I was part of that community, we had some speedruns on the website, which I'll probably talk about in a little bit.
Yeah, you did.
Before they were called speedruns, I had nobody knew what that was. There was no speedrunning community. So I called them contests, contests to beat the game the fastest you could. We had four of them, I believe.
Yep.
Four or five of them. And you know, I thought they went really well, and we used emulators to accomplish it. But there's a gentleman named Summoning Salt that makes a series of videos on YouTube that makes speedrunning so exciting. I think it's exciting anyway, but he's got this compelling storytelling ability. Even more so, I think he's even better at this than I am. I think I'm pretty good at telling the story, but he's like way better.
You are. Yeah.
So thank you. But I think he's better. So he was actually on a stream earlier today. He was on Arcus's Ninja Gaiden stream because Arcus just hit a PB, but I digress. So what ended up happening was that I started going to different speedrunner streams on Twitch, and I came upon one, his name's Pronzo. He's a Zelda 1, Zelda 2 speedrunner. He does a lot of stuff, but he's primarily Zelda 1 and 2. And I don't remember how it came up anymore, but somehow the topic of Zofar's Domain popped up in the chat, or maybe I made a comment because somebody mentioned an emulator. I don't remember anymore. And right, Pronzo right. was looking at the chatter between me and the other people in the chat, and he said, wait a minute, you're that Zofar? And I'm like, wait, there's people that remember Zophar's domain. I had no idea. Like, I knew Zophar.net still existed, but mm-hmm. I just, you know, to me, it was an archive that occasionally got updated and, you know, a nice thing that's still, you know, there to see, but a relic of the past.
Right.
I'm sure better sites took their its place and all that stuff. But no, apparently there are people that were around back in the day and people that weren't who went there anyway after the fact that knew it. And so I was like, okay, that's got to be a coincidence. I probably just happened to stumble upon like the one stream in Twitch where there's a couple people that remembered and one of them happened to be the streamer.
Yeah.
So then maybe a week or two later, I was on another stream, this time with a gentleman named the Retro Runner, an awesome, awesome Ninja Gaiden speedrunner who currently holds the world record for Ninja Gaiden.
Right.
And it happened again. And he said, wait, no way, you're Zophar? No, you're messing with me. You're pulling my leg or something like that. And I'm like, okay, there's like something going on here. Like, and right. It just kept happening. Every stream I would go in, when I would start chattering, people would see the name, which is Zophar1 on Twitch. And they would ask the question, are you the Zophar that created or founded whatever Zophar's domain? And, you know, I always say yes, but I couldn't have done it without all the amazing staff over the years that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, so I apparently the brand still exists and there's a decent amount of people that remember it. So now you add all this together, what's been going on with the pandemic, the additional stress that I've been, you know, facing, the fact that I knew somebody and they passed away. And I still, to this day, it just hurts me to think about it. It's really, really horrible. He had children too. I was like, I'm going to do something with this. So I was like, all right, they're doing streaming. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I did have a very brief show, Zophar's Underworld, which you know all about. You were on one with me.
I was, yep.
And
I still have the CD.
same. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to do something. I'm going to figure it out. So I talked to Hyper Z, good friend of mine, who you remember from the emulation community back in the 90s.
Yep.
And I asked him, I was like, how does this all work? I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And I got to, like, you know, although he'll probably never admit it if you ask him, he is a huge, huge reason why I was able to ramp up as quickly as I did with the technology side. And all, he gave me a lot of great suggestions that I took and I, you know, implemented. So thank you, Hyper Z. Thank you so much for speed running me to the beginning of Twitch here. And it just, you know, again, it's we have a long climb to go to, you know, to the partnership, which if we reach, great. If we don't, I'm not expecting it. But just the level of support in such a short time, you know, we started doing this in mid-January. Right now, it's the beginning of May. So what's it been, only 3.5 months?
Only 3.5 months.
The level of support has just been amazing. And again, I just can't thank you all enough for those that that are watching this right now that have visited the stream. It's just been amazing. So that's kind of why I'm back now. That's a little bit of a refresher on everything that took place from, you know, when I transferred the site back in 2000 to the present. I hope that makes sense.
Well, but yeah, no, it does make sense. And I think one of the things that you've touched upon is the fact that there's a history and there's a brand behind Zophar's domain. And the fact that you were able to elevate and move forward, but people remember you. And that's the big thing. People remember you as that individual. And that's why you were able to take off and be a celebrity in the Twitch community so quickly. In addition to the fact that you've had people that have been able to help you, friends that have helped you along the way, and those are some things that definitely stick with you, right? It is the people that we keep close to us that help us and kind of lift us up as we continue this journey. And so you have to appreciate that, right? The fact that you've had so many people come out, even after how many years, and we've known each other for quite a long time, and we've only reconnected, we've been connected for a few years on a social media platform, right? But you know, we've only truly reconnected after you started talking about the, you know, streaming on Twitch. And I've even started streaming on Twitch because I'm like, hey, you know what, this does sound like fun, And it's something that would definitely be cool to do. So that's part of the reason why I started streaming, is because you started streaming, and I said, hey, you know what, let me give this a shot myself. And yeah, I'm not as big of a celebrity as you, but
I'm not a celebrity, but I did learn that the brand is still there, which was awesome to see.
And that goes back to the point of the history of Zophar. So, you know, when you've established it, and just, you know, take people through the history of Zophar's domain, what drove you to start the site to begin with. And it's a fascinating history, which I've been a part of course, in my area. But I'm sure the listeners would love to hear directly from you the long and prestigious history of Zophar as Zophar domain, and yourself as well. So
sure. So yeah. Basically, I found out about emulation around, I want to say, maybe late 95, early 96, right around there.
Right about when I did, yeah.
and at the time, there were not a lot of resources, and there were not a lot of emulators themselves. And the ones that existed were kind of scattered throughout. So my two big, the models, the sites that I modeled Zophar's domain after, were two sites called Archaic Ruins and mm-hmm. Note 99. They were kind of my inspiration.
Yep.
Each site had something about it that I wanted to incorporate into my own. And I'll tell you where I got the idea even to make one. Archaic Ruins was very good when it came to the news articles themselves, you know, very good at updating and talking about, you know, this new emulator, or, you know, Damaged Cybernetics is, you know, releasing this thing, or which is mm-hmm. a whole other story, which we can do another podcast on.
Yeah. That's one.
But Archaic Ruins was really good with news and keeping you up to date. And then Note 99 had a decent archive. You know, it had a number of emulators. It would link to those emulators, link to the home pages, and tell you just a quick little blurb about each, but really not a lot in the way of news. And so both of those sites had something really nice about them, but neither one, to me, itched my scratch. In other words, I had to visit both. I had to still visit other sites. Like, I had to go to different places to get all the information I wanted. And so I thought to myself, like, they're both awesome, awesome, awesome sites.
Right.
The webmasters did a great job. The creators did a great job. But I said, what if I'm someone new, which I was, and I just want to get into Nintendo emulation? Hey, where can I go? I just want to go to a site that's going to tell me, here's all the Nintendo emulators. Here's the pros and cons. When they get updated, tell me. Click this link, and then we can chat about it somewhere. Mm-hmm. There was no site like this. Didn't exist.
Right, right.
Well, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I think I want to make one, because if there isn't one, somebody's got to do it, so I'll do it. Someone's got to do it, so I'll do it. So that is how the idea of Zophar's domain came about. Now, excuse me, where did the name come from? So Zophar was the final boss of one of my favorite RPGs of all time, Lunar 2 for the Sega CD, which I am streaming right now. Shameless plug.
Shameless plug, right?
And Zophar's Domain is the final dungeon of that video game. So there was no other reason other than 1995 is when that game came out. It's now 1996. It's my favorite game of all time at that point, still one of my favorites. And I said, okay, well, this is an easy brand. I'm just going to make a site called Zophar's Domain, and I'll be Zophar.
Easy. Yeah, there you go.
Because that way I didn't have to think about it very hard, and I can just move on to like the stuff that I really needed to learn, which is how do I make a website, and what the hell is HTML, and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's how Zophar and Zophar's domain was born. And then once I started getting into it, I started looking really closely. I looked at the HTML code for Archaic Ruins. I looked at the HTML code for Note 99, basically because there was no, in the mid 90s, at least not in Philadelphia, I didn't know of any high school that taught you how to use HTML to make a website. Like, just there was.
It was back then. It was an enigma in a lot of schools, right?
Yes, so nobody knew. We were still using Mac LCs from the early 90s, and you know, playing little black and white games. It was crazy.
Yeah, GeoCities,
and Oregon Trail, and
So
I'm like, all right, I'm just going to study the code. So I studied it, and then I realized, okay, well, I don't have any graphical ability whatsoever. And by the way, over 20 years later, nothing has changed. I still don't. 25 years, whatever. So I went and I found some people online through IRC, which, for those that aren't familiar with IRC, that's a an old chat protocol from internet the 90s that some chat, people yeah. internet relay chat that some yep. people do still use, but I've moved on to Discord for a variety of reasons having to do with safety, privacy, and all that good stuff and security. Yep. But back then it was a big thing. So I found some people that were good at programming. That was Infi. People that were good at graphics. That was Evil Homer. I don't know his real name. Infi was Alan. And, you know, I found a group of people, Stick Figure, which is Ernie Smith, who's still around today, who's actually the creator of the short form blog. So I found some good people and I said, hey, you want to come along and help me, you know, run this site and do some cool stuff. And I didn't know, like, this was not a Steve Jobs moment, just to be clear. I didn't go up to anyone and say, you want to help me change the world? Like, no. It was really just, hey, you want to do something cool? Like,
but it might as well have been, right? Because you built an iconic site that people to this day still visit. So
I appreciate that. But I didn't have, like, I knew in my head, I had a very simple goal. Mm-hmm. Create a site that if I want to know about an emulator, what emulator to get, what is good, what is bad, what's the pro, what's the con, when's it updated, let's talk about it, how do I get to work, the 101 of emulators.
Mm-hmm.
So Far's Domain is a great resource. One of many. My hope, just to be clear, was that it would inspire other sites to also start their own, you know, communities, and over time this would be the norm. You would have websites like Zofar's Domain that would be one-stop shops for emulation. That was the goal. I know, not even close did I think that, you know, 25 years on, the only website left that still had a collection of emulators would be Zofar's Domain. I had no idea, because that's it, where it went. Was it went a very, very interesting direction.
Well, it goes to the staying power, right? The site has
right. And I will say far, far, you know, better types of resources have come along over the years. But Zofar's Domain still persisted. It still exists, like, and it morphed into other things. So that was my vision, a one-stop shop for someone that doesn't know what's going on with emulation that could learn about it. And then once they've learned about it, a really easy place to go where, okay, want to get my updates? All right. Oh, cool. You know, GenM has gotten a new update that adds, you know, better sound. Let's go download it. Sweet. And here's what they think on Zofar's Domain about that emulator, and good to go. Yeah. So that was the vision.
But, you know, it's interesting. You note that one of your goals was to help spawn more resources and more sites out there. And it really, you know, it really did accomplish that goal in a big way in the 90s. I mean, you saw sites like EmuLim, EmuCab, which I worked on, and to an extent, Retro Games was spurred from the idea. You can make an argument that it started with the site that you, along with your team, put up. And had it not been for that concept of, you know, bringing it in and developing that one-stop emulation shop, I would say, for what you need in, say, NES emulation or Atari emulation, all that stuff, a lot of the sites even back then and even today would not exist. And even to an extent, like, the evolution of emulation wouldn't have gotten to where it is today. You know, as much as you're modest, it has had an impact. Don't you agree to that?
Oh, no, there's no doubt. It definitely has impacted a lot of people. But I try to look at it that if I hadn't done it, I'm sure somebody else would have. And you saw, like you mentioned, MU Camp and Retro Games. And there were a lot of sites, Dave's Classics, right? There were a lot of other emulation sites around that time that started to do that. But I saw the need. And I knew in my head, I had a rough, very rough draft of what I wanted it to look like. And there were certain things I wanted on there. And so I knew that if I wanted it to, like, if I wanted there to be a site that looked in my head, like, kind of the way I wanted it to be, I had to put it into existence. Like, I couldn't just hope and pray and wish it into being, like, oh, I wish someday someone will do this. Like, I always learned from a young age, like, if you want something, you believe in something, you put your mind to it, you can do it, but you got to do it. Like, you can't just wait around. You can't just, you know, hope that something's going to happen. You got to make the thing come true.
So. Like in when you're watching Family Guy, you know, that wish it wanted to do it. If you remember that second, yeah. There. But it's true, you know, it's kind of true that, you know, you always have a vision, and it's about getting the right people in place at the right time to develop
and,
that.
And if it hadn't been for all those amazing people, like I said, that I found, there's no way. The graphics, I still to this day can't do anything graphically, forget it. You know, I had people that made the layout look way better. I actually, I don't know if you were you on the stream a few weeks back or last month for the anniversary of Nesticle, where I showed off the, so I showed off that original iteration of Zophar's Domain. That was rough. I mean, it was rough, literally. And that's kind of my point, is I found good people after it launched over time that were good at designing things and good at graphics and good with layouts, and we got it way, way more polished. If I hadn't had all that, forget it. It would have just been a vision without execution. So I can't thank all those great people enough for all they did.
And it is about great people, because I know on Gamers Uplink, I had staff members that went on to work for sites like IGN and other places. People that have been inspired to develop their own games and do some great things inside and outside of the industry. With the staff that you kind of mentored and nurtured, right? You have the same part. You mentioned one of your staff members was the inventor of the short form blog and all that stuff, but your staff has gone on to do amazing things, right?
No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. So, talk about where are the iconic staff members from back then are today? I mean, some of them are still around they've come to Twitch, right? But then there are others that have done some great things. So, talk about that for a second.
Yeah, I think Ernie Smith is the one that comes to mind front and foremost, because he actually, as you just mentioned, right, the author of the short form blog. You can find him right now if you were to go on Twitter. He's got all kinds of amazing articles and journalistic pieces that he's done. There was one he did in particular 5 years ago, and maybe you'll link to it in this video. Sure. But he did a 20-year retrospective on Nesticle, but it's a really well-written article. And he brought me in and a bunch of other great people for the interview, just kind of dissecting how it all came to be, what went on during that time period, where are we at 20 years later? And just like, that's the kind of stuff when he was working on Zophar's Domain with the rest of us as teenagers, as a lot of us were kids then, I could see, like, he had far, far more ability from a journalistic perspective, from a writing ability, than I ever will, ever did and ever will. And I saw that. But again, that just goes back to the amazing work the staffers did. I would rather someone like him, that's his passion, that's what he wants to do. Great. You be the article writer for Zophar's Domain. You be the person to write up those really awesome articles with retrospectives and descriptions. And like, that's going to be you. Right. So yeah, he went on to be very successful. He actually, if you go on Twitter and you search for you would search for Ernie Smith, he actually has he has the white check mark on Twitter. And he has a short form blog that he calls Read Tedium, and a whole bunch of other stuff that he's worked on. He's worked on Motherboard, which is where the Nesticle article is from. So he comes to mind, first and foremost, and he's still around today. Just was talking with him a little bit a few weeks back on the Nesticle stream. He was there for a little bit. So he's definitely one. I recently saw BNU. BNU was actually one of the front end maintainers. So back then, this might sound kind of foreign to people that don't know what front ends were. Like, what are you talking about, front ends? it's totally out of this universe here. But front ends were basically back when emulators, many of them were written for DOS. And yes, they were command prompt driven, which means, just double clicking, that's not how you would do it. Like,
no,
you would actually have to enter in, like, for example, let's see,
ESNES:\
Mario.NES minus S for sound, 44 for Fleetwood Coast. Craziness. Yes. You're like, what are you talking about, Zophar? That was how a lot of emulators were back then. They didn't all have, GUIs or GUIs, graphical user interfaces. And so the front ends were designed to be programs that would take those prompt based emulators and give it graphics, give it a front end, so to speak. Yep. So BNU was the maintainer of the front end section. He would be responsible for going and finding different front ends. He didn't create them. He'd find them, right? Mm-hmm. And then he would put them on Zophar's domain. Again, the whole one-stop shop idea. Yep. He is still around today. I actually ran into him on Twitch. He was there at the Nesticle anniversary stream, and he told me he was doing well. Sadly, I didn't get to talk to him after the stream, so I don't know what he's been doing since then, but it's encouraging to know he's still around, and it's someone I definitely want to catch up with. Then you have Noah Maniac. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember Noah Maniac. He's still around too. I've kept in touch with him over the years through social media. And he's mm-hmm. been doing really well. He hasn't popped in on Twitch yet. Hoping he does so we can kind of chat, because I do want to catch up with him as well.
Right.
But he was another staffer that was there, you know, near the beginning of everything. And he's a good dude. And then you have Infi. So Infi, I lost touch with him a couple of years ago, unfortunately. He's on social media, but he hasn't really been active on there. But he went on to become a programmer for doing various things. He was the very first staff member we ever had, along with Evil Homer. So the original three were me, Evil Homer for graphics, mm-hmm. and Infi, which is Alan, for programming. And he did all kinds of awesome stuff for us back then. Perl was the big programming language for online. Yeah,
don't remind me of Perl. I love hate relationship with Perl back then.
A lot did. Yeah. That was the thing then. So
yeah,
he wrote a lot of the he actually wrote the original web forms for us. So the forms where you could post and reply to people, like, because you know nowadays you have Facebook and Twitter and all these other systems that are just platforms already exist, but mm-hmm. back then there was no platform. You had to make it yourself. You had to go find it, right?
Yep.
Make a website, go find what. So he actually programmed for us a web form. And then later on, he found others like WW Threads and like other versions. He was responsible for finding those programs or writing some of them, writing scripts for them and implementing them onto Zophar's domain. So he went on to become a programmer, and I would love to catch up with him. It's just, I haven't really, I want to say maybe the last time I said anything to him was maybe like, oh boy, maybe 5 years ago.
Five
or 6 years at least. Yeah, at least
that's a gap for sure.
Yep. I every year though I do wish him happy birthday on his social media. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually, as we're talking right now, I'm like very quickly looking at his social media, and yeah, it's been, looks like the last response I had would have been 2017, it looks like.
Mm.
I think it's 2017. So it's been a few years. I hope he's doing well, and I'd love to catch up. So Infi, if you happen to be listening to this, feel free to hit me up. I'd love to catch up, love to chat. You're an awesome dude, and I hope you've been doing well, and I hope you're continuing to do well.
Well, it sounds like the staff has gone on to do some great things, that's for sure. And so I guess people like you and I can definitely appreciate the things that we've built have helped other people move into things that allow them to be productive in careers and inspire them to do more, from long-form blogs to be programmers and all the like. And so that's definitely great stuff, for sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Switching gears a little bit, talking about your Twitch stream for a little bit. You do stream a lot of RPGs, and I think I can appreciate that, because while I'm not necessarily an RPG player myself, I understand and appreciate the theatrics and the story behind RPGs. And I know your favorite RPG is Lunar Eternal Nights 2.
Close. Lunar Eternal Blue, yes.
Lunar Eternal Blue.
Close enough.
There's always a degree of memory. I have a good memory, but it's just sometimes, as you get old like us, and you like to call this silver, right? It's if it's silver, fine. I'll go with yours saying silver. So there's a little bit of gray right over here, right? This is like dark gray.
Nope, that's dark silver and that's light silver.
Well, all right. You know, you flattered me, sir. I appreciate that. But you know, with what you've done, there is an art in engaging people in the narrative. So kind of take me through the artistry of being on Twitch, the process, and how you engage from a storytelling perspective.
Yeah, for sure. So after Hyper-Z walked me through the technological aspects of Twitch, you know, the what you use, how you use broadcasting software and all of that stuff, the first thing I decided I needed to do was just to start streaming. Like, I knew that the first bunch would be very rough, no different than It's So Far's Domain in the beginning. Yeah. And I was like, I just got to just kind of go into it. So the first streams, which still exist, you can view them. I have VODs of them. I saved them as highlights. You see, I'm just trying to find my foot. And I'm like, hey, how you doing? And I'm playing some games that I absolutely did not want to play. But I'm like, these are quick, fast games. I can at least load them up and start playing them and see what happens. And it was just really, really rough in the very beginning. And then after a couple of weeks, once I started to figure out how the flow of Twitch worked and, you know, what people liked, because, you know, any kind of streaming that you do, you're some form of content creator. I would say that this is far easier for me to do than creating content for YouTube, let's say, which I absolutely would love to do one of these days, but it requires a lot more thought. Like for example, our podcast right now, you're going to go back when we're done talking, like you're all watching this right now and you're going to see this podcast nice, beautifully, you know, formed and edited and probably have a nice intro you probably saw already. And there's probably an outro. Yeah. And right. And then you're creating the content. And Twitch, it's all live and it's basically all on the fly stuff. So that kind of excited me. Like, you know, this is like whatever you're doing, people are going to see this. So it really makes you think on your feet quicker and be able to react to things really fast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're on a stage. And so I tried to do a nice mix of, number one, you got to be genuine because, yes, you're trying to give people entertainment. You're trying to make them interested and you want them to have fun. You got to have fun, too. So if I'm not enjoying what I'm doing, you know, it's going to be obvious to all of you that it's not fun and you're not going to have any fun. On my end, I know that I'm enjoying it and I'm playing the games that I want to play. Then I want to make sure you're all having a good time. So engaging with your audience, like I have this thing and I did this back with Zofar's Domain where I would respond even at the very end for the end of that four and a half year period, where I ran the website, I responded to every single person. Even most of the trolls, they were existed then. They're still around. But I would respond to everybody because I believe that if a person has the wherewithal to write you or email you or whatever the form of media is, they want to talk to you. You know, talk to them. And so, in every single stream, and I'm not perfect, but every stream that we do, no matter how busy it gets, I sit there. There are times where I've brought my stream to a screeching halt to make sure I go and I read every single line and I respond to every single person. Because again, like there are streams, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with this. There are streams out there that are just really big, really, really popular. And like the chats are just flowing like blah, 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 blah. And no one's, you know, you have to spend channel points to get your message highlighted, because if it's not highlighted, the streamer's never going to see it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I that's not the kind of stream I want to run. My opinion on that is if it's that big to where there's no interaction anymore, I can just put some YouTube videos together, make my content, edit it how I want it, and then you can go watch it. For me, the big draw of streaming is the interaction. Mm-hmm. No different than on Zofar's Domain, connecting with me on the forums or emailing me. Like Twitch is all about interacting with me and getting me to do fun things. So like, I had an absolute blast, since we're talking about my process. When I decided what the channel points would be in Twitch, what redemptions, it was very important to me that these be redemptions for things that I enjoy doing and things that I like. One thing, like I'm watching other streamers doing, I'm like, you know, if I don't like this, if I would not do this myself, I'm not going to do it. But I'm like, what can I do? Well, I love Halloween, so put on a pirate hat. Sounds fun. I love to sing. I'm not great at it, but I love to sing and hum video game music. Make a little redemption for that.
Well, I redeemed that twice.
Yes, you did.
including one time where it was like one. It was like a almost a methodic type of melody, and then one that was really upbeat, and they turned out brilliant, I thought.
Yeah, but, I appreciate it. So. But then the big one, which just got redeemed a few days ago, was the action figure Overload.
Yeah, and you know what? Just to interject, I kept trying to say towards that one, and I never got enough silver, because I'm always like hidden the silver redemption on, like, now I know, and knowing that's a battle,
that's on purpose. So that's, so yeah. We're talking about the process. It's kind of like if you ever went to like one of those arcades and they've got like the whack-a-moles and the coin machine, and yeah, you get tickets, and it's like, oh man, if I only had 500,000 tickets, I could get a Nintendo Switch. But you know, for just 100 tickets, I can get this little ball, or this little tiny plastic figurine that's cost like 5 cents. So it's absolutely designed to make you want to hang out, right? That's the whole point of channel points. I don't mind telling people this is the fun of it, right? Of it's to draw you in and say, okay, well, these are interesting looking redemptions. So maybe if the game I'm playing or my personality in the very beginning, you don't get to know me just yet in the beginning, doesn't draw you in, maybe these channel points will make you interested enough to kind of stick around a bit, lurk for a bit, listen. And then maybe you'll find out, oh, you know, this game is really neat, I'll stick around for this. Or, you know, he's really weird, but he's making me laugh. Like, this dude's so strange, I got to stick around for this. And again, that's my brand. Like my brand, for whatever it was when I made Zophar's Domain, you didn't get to see a lot of me other than the couple of, you know, web shows that we did, the Zophar's Underworld stuff, and we didn't know what a podcast was, basically. But I decided this time I'm going to let everyone see, like, my personality. My real personality is I'm goofy as crap. Like, I am a goofy, odd dude. And I'm like, I'm going to show it off. I'm going to let people see that, you know, Zophar is actually not necessarily this like dark mythical god of emulators or whatever goofy weird thing some people think. No, he's actually this really fun, goofy, weird dude that likes playing video games, likes to make a fool of himself, and has fun doing it. who I am.
But a lot of people knew that. I mean, I knew that.
You got to know me, but yeah, a lot of people didn't necessarily know what to expect. So I'm like, I'm just going to show everyone. There's going to be no, like, nothing fake, nothing not genuine here. This is really me. Now I'm going to do things that make you entertained, right? And I'm going to, you know, show as much of my goofy personality as I possibly can during these streams. But like, this is my goofy personality. So talking about, you know, the process, it was very important to me that I'd be able to do some of this stuff, as much of this stuff on the fly as I possibly could, because the more of it you do that's on the fly, the more genuine it is, the more fun that it is. And then if you mess up during stream, again, this is part of the charm of live streaming, you know, like, this is like really happening right now. So like what you saw, like you, I think you were there, right, for it. I'm pretty sure you were there to see that redemption.
The Catholic grade school. Yeah.
That was all like, it's not like I took a YouTube video and just hit play and then no. I sat there, I went and I had to click an OBS to go to the away screen. I had to pull up my green screen, pull it back down this way. And I had to put my Castle Grayskull up and arrange the action figures. And then I had to move myself off to the side, swing the microphone around, load up a video that I had made literally 25 minutes before the stream started, which I actually found a typo in, but this is the joy of live streaming. Oops. And then click, and I'm here, and then and literally, like, I'm a one-man show doing all of this, and I just keep but it was fun. It was so much fun, and I was like, I don't know how this is going to turn out. This could be like the greatest catastrophe ever, or this could be freaking comedy gold. I don't know what it ended up being. I know I had a lot of fun doing it, and people seemed to enjoy it, and that's what I want to bring to my streams. That's the process. I want you to have fun. I want you to be entertained, and then while you're being entertained, come talk to me about whatever you want. Ask me whatever questions you want. There's very little you can ask me that's gonna really offend me. If I don't want to answer something, I just won't answer it.
Exactly.
Right. You know, I'm not gonna throw. Generally, not gonna throw you out as long as you're not trolling each other. You know, I want it to be fun for everybody. And if you want to talk a little bit about the old days and emulation, and go ahead, talk about it. If it's something that I think needs to be off stream, I'll tell you. Like earlier today, I think you were there for a little bit of it. We were doing the Phantasmagoria stream, and there was a gentleman that came in that was asking some emulator questions. Some of them were a little bit detailed. So I just said, hey, if you want to chat about it on Discord afterwards, just, you know, hit me up. We can chat about it. But it's all to have fun, to be entertained. And, you know, I have that advantage. I'm very lucky that I created a website, found a great bunch of people back in the 90s. And so there's more draw beyond just the goofiness and just the games, there's also that aspect of, okay, I have some questions about Zophar's Domain too, and I'm happy to, any way I can entertain, no matter what that looks like, whether it's playing a game, chatting about current events, talking about emulation, talking about Zophar's Domain, talking about your day, asking you how you're doing, you tell me. Like, it doesn't, you'll notice on a lot of my streams, you know, because you've been on a bunch of them, I always ask, like, how are you all doing? How are you feeling? What's going on? Tell me a story. How was your day? Like, I want to know. It's not, can't just be about me, you know.
You see, here's the and I think that's what makes your stream genuine and you genuine, right? Because you do respond to everybody, you do answer people, you do chat with people, whether on your stream or on Discord, you give those people the right word I'm looking for is you brighten up their day, right? Like when I saw your 50,000 redemption and the Castle Grayskull, I was laughing. I'll tell you that it was pretty hilarious. So I'll say it was more comedy gold. You know, whether somebody says it's a great comedy gold or a lame comedy gold, it doesn't matter, because it was truly comedy gold versus you know, some of the things. And you look at other streamers, and you're right, there's a lot of people that get 1,000 messages all at once. But there are some streamers out there like yourself. And I think Retro Island Gaming is another one that responds to a lot of people.
Can I say a word about that real quick?
Yeah, please.
So when it comes to Retro Island Gaming, that's like, for me, so you know how I was talking about Zophar's Domain? I modeled it. I was inspired by Archaic Ruins and Node 99. So I'll tell you right now, Retro Island Gaming and Chade, I make fun of Sade, it's Chade. but Retro Island Gaming and Chade are my models, because Retro Island Gaming it blew up. Like, I didn't get to see it blow up when it did, but I did watch like the trackers, and I saw, like, you know, one day, like around the pandemic, I think it was, it's he really shot up. But like, he's an example of, like, it's a busy stream. He gets a lot of people. He routinely gets 500, 600, 700 viewers at a time. And they're saying lots of stuff. And they're, you know, setting off sound effects and the demon bit alerts, and his hat's on, then his hat's not on, then El Dorado's blowing him up and all this other crazy stuff. But he's responding to everything.
Yeah.
And that's what I want, you know, that's what I'd like my stream to be. I'm not saying it's going to be crazy, like, you know, he's got his brand. My brand is, I you know, is not having 10,000 effects all over the place. Mine is more a roller coaster of, you have the chill, calm moments, then you have the hype moments. Whoa, hype. And then it's calm again. Then I get frustrated and rage. So it's like, that's my thing is this, the highs and the lows. But I want to be able to have whatever the stream is, whatever, if you know, if this is as popular as it ever gets, that's totally fine. If it ends up getting whatever it is, I just want to be able to have anyone that comes to the stream have fun, be entertained, feel comfortable chatting with me about whatever. Like, I like to think that this is a very, you know, very, very safe area just to talk about whatever you want to talk about, and have some fun doing it. And, you know, hopefully we have a fun, you know, 3 to 4 hours together. That's generally how long my streams typically run. Yep. And then do it all over again the next time. So I hope that makes sense. Hope that answers your question, George.
No, absolutely. It does. And on that front, you know, we mentioned Retro Island Gaming and your stream and Chade. Thank you. Yeah. and you know, it's funny because I would have made the same mistake. I would have met Sade, because Sade is like the famous singer, and, you know, yeah, that's the whole thing.
You remember the story of how that came about, right? It's one of my redemptions.
I remember, yes. And
the very first raid.
You butchered his name.
I butchered his name. Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is really funny that I ruined his name. I'm going to make this a thing.
Exactly. but that's kind of what you know, binds us together as a community, right? Because we joke and we reminisce and all that stuff. Just, you know, build a sense of a belonging. And I think that's what we had when we were, you know, going back in time into the 90s and early 2000s. We did have a sense of community. We did have a sense, you know, we were looking at it. We were really at the infancy of retro gaming when we started going into it, right? But there's been a lot of evolution. So would you say that retro gaming is cool again? with everything happening.
So I would kind of turn that one around. I wouldn't even use the word cool here. I like to think that, you know, everything's cool.
Of course.
I would say retro gaming is fun again. And fun I'll tell again. You what I mean when I say that. So when I, you know, created Zophar's Domain with a bunch of great people, and I told you like what my vision was, the whole reason I got into emulation to begin with, we didn't even talk about that, was because I wanted to be able to play games. And to me, like in 1996, 5 to 10 years prior was retro. Wow, it's so long ago. Remember when we were like, I was 16. What do I mean remember? Now it's retro because now I'm 41. But yeah. To my 16-year-old self, that was retro. Wow, 6 years ago was so long ago. I can't believe it.
Yeah. Exactly.
But you know, a lot of my systems just stopped working. My Sega CD wasn't reading half my discs anymore. The discs were getting, you know, some of them were scratched up or some of them just weren't reading, or, you know, my Nintendo, forget it. Like 90% of the cartridges I've blown on them to hell. And, you know, you learned years later, don't do that. You're just making it worse. But it, you know, to me, it was like, oh, I just keep blowing on it. it's gonna make it work. It's gonna make it work.
I still do it. I still do that, unfortunately.
So. It's like, what else am I supposed to do? You know, things just, they stopped working, and you couldn't find a lot of these games, even that short amount of time. Like, you know, the stores were just selling the newest stuff. So if you wanted to buy a Nintendo game, you had to go to your used game store or Blockbuster and just hope that someone, you know, traded in an old game that actually works. So for me, emulators was a way to play the games that I had that stopped working. Like that was that was the whole thing. Lunar was one of the games that were my Sega CD in 1996. I had two Sega CDs. I had a Model 1 and a Model 2. And both of them, which I still own, I don't think they work anymore, because I vividly remember the Genesis part works fine, but I vividly remember the Sega CD lasers just stopped reading discs reliably. Sometimes they'd work, sometimes they wouldn't, sometimes they'd crash. And what's interesting is, at the end of Zophar's Domain of my tenure in 2000, there still wasn't really a Sega CD emulator at that point yet. So the whole reason I made it, it didn't exist. But then what's interesting about this is 25 years on, whatever, now these games work fine. You're seeing me playing games like Lunar and Lunar 2. Those are Sega CD games. If I didn't tell you that was on an emulator, you didn't see the menu, you wouldn't know it. They're very close to perfect. They're very close. Very, very close. And so like, that's to me, like that's the enjoyment. That's what I look to, that's what I look to do. That's what I look to create. I hope that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. You know, it's amazing how we, went from an age where, you know, emulation was kind of taboo, right? And gone into this age now where emulation is mainstream. Like, you can go and, get a Nintendo Switch and, you know, subscribe to a service and download all the games that you played, or even install, a Linux derivative that allows you to play all the games and, do that. I've done it myself. I've done plenty of that. So, and I would actually agree, you know, it's retro gaming is fun again, when you can buy like an arcade 1-up out there or Legends Ultimate and, you know, get an immense amount of like mini consoles and go on Arcade Archives and get Arcade Archives and download it through the Switch and PlayStation 4 reminisce it. I mean, I got Taito Milestones, which we're going to be reviewing on the site very shortly too, and I've been having fun playing.
But just to circle back, because I do want to conclude, retro gaming to me is fun again, because many years have passed now. You've had the PlayStation 2 and the Xbox 360s and the 4 and the 5 and the Nintendo Switch, and they're all fun systems. But I think as time goes on, it's becoming more and more clear that there's like this lost art form that people are trying to get back. Think about Square Enix releasing, you know, the endless Final Fantasy pixel remasters.
Yep.
Think about games that are done in the style of retro, like Octopath Traveler and Triangle Strategy, also from Square Enix, that are new games, but they're done in this like shiny pixel art version of the past. People want the games that they grew up with in the 80s and 90s, they want that feeling of fun, you know, not necessarily the technological aspect of it. Like, you don't have to have super, super flashy graphics and like the most amazing soundtrack in the world, although it helps, right? What people want is they want gameplay. They want fun. And that, so to me, we now, the difference between now and the 90s, there's only really one big difference. Well, two. One is that enough time has really passed now to really say, this stuff is really retro. This is from the past.
Exactly.
But number two, technology has now caught up 10,000 fold to where you can experience these games from the past without having to jump through hoops anymore.
Exactly.
Like, it is far easier now to go and like take an emulator, go grab your game, go start playing it than it was 20, 25 years ago. And the games work for a lot of the systems. They work great. The entire 16-bit and lower era looks great. A lot of the 32-bit stuff is starting to work really well now. And then anything past that, honestly, is not retro anyway. I like to think, and there's like 8,000 people take 8,000 different things here, but I like to think that the retro era ended on the PlayStation and Saturn. That was the beginning of the end. Like, I would say PlayStation, Saturn, and N64 was retro, but it was the 3D retro. After that, when you started to get into PlayStation 2 and the Xbox 360, that was the beginning of modern gaming, because that was when you started to get into things like Xbox Live and online. And I mean, technically Dreamcast did online. That's where it really started to take off. And that's where I think the modern era of gaming actually began. So for me, retro is everything from the first generation of the 3D consoles and backwards. And I think that technology has allowed you to experience almost all of that stuff now. And I think people are really, really enjoying it. And I also think that's showing up, especially since the pandemic began. I think that's showing up in the cost of some of the retro games.
Oh yeah, and absolutely. And I think that's been one of the biggest challenges. So, it's nice, because in the local stores, you're not seeing that effect. Like, I have a fantastic gaming store right down the road, Pandora's Box, that I know the owner, and he's reasonably priced. He has an amazing store with toys, with retro toys and games, and I go there at least once a month to shop. You're seeing a lot of challenges with scalpers and the like, and you've recently had your own experience with that in trying to acquire a game, so for your stream. So, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So first, I want to be clear that any game shop, like there's a lot of game shops and game preservationists, right? They have the right to charge what they want to charge.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying, that they can't set their prices. They absolutely can. The problem that I have is with who I like to term the scalpers, the people, especially on eBay. eBay seems to be like the breeding ground for this, where they will go, they will take a look at a website, for example, pricecharting.com, and take a look to see what games are going for, which is nothing more than just a spider looking at eBay sales and then deciding that's what they are, right? And they'll price them higher, a little higher in most cases, than what the going rate according to the site is. And it doesn't matter what the condition is. It could be reproductions. It could be copied manuals. It could be burned discs. It can be cracked discs. My favorite example is Shining Force 3. A person wanted $280 for a cracked Shining Force 3 disc. When I say cracked, here's the disc, and here's the center. And there was a crack that went from the center all the way outwards to the point where you could, like, go like this. And it was very clearly visible in the picture. By the way, the condition was like new.
Like,
no. He was nice enough to post a picture, but it said like new. So when you search for it, very clever, it'll come up. And then you might be like, it's the original case and manual. Oh, I really could use that. And he just let it sit there and sit there and sit there. It sat there for over 2 months. George, it sold. It sold a few weeks ago.
I can't believe that something like that would sell. That's just insane. And there's a signature like.
And then what happens? It's like a game now. A website like pricecharting.com will now say, now the game, when it's not like new and not even complete in box, is going for $280, and then the price goes further up. It's a feedback loop. Yeah. And they just sit there. They don't mind because they're not gamers. These are the scalpers I'm talking about. They're not gamers. So they're selling many, many, many other things. So they can keep relisting it over and over and over. And if it doesn't sell, it doesn't sell. And eventually they know some poor soul that doesn't realize what they bought will bid on it or do buy it now or make an offer. And they'll accept it. And now the price is even higher. So that's I have a serious problem with that. I do they have the right to do it? They do. Not the person with the crack disc, not the unscrupulous people that lie on the listings. That's not cool. Those people should get reported, honestly, that lie. Don't lie. But I truly believe that if you're going to sell video games or any kind of anything, you're going to sell any product, you got to be honest about what you're selling. You got to tell the truth. You got to represent it properly. And if everyone's telling the truth and everything's equal, I think the marketplace will even itself out. It will make more sense. Do I think that I should pay what Shining Force 3 cost when it came out, $60? No, absolutely not. No, they don't make it anymore. It's going to go up. But $450 for Shining Force 3 and $750 for Popful Mail. No. Cause I see how they're selling for this. It's the scalpers, that are driving the prices up. So again, game shops, game preservationists, you have the right to sell your product for what you want to sell it for. I do not disagree with you. My disagreement is with the scalpers, the people not interested in video games that are driving prices up through unscrupulous practices. That's the problem I have. Hope that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. But even going back to the gaming stores, dealing with brick and mortar, it's always great to go see what you're getting, right?
Absolutely.
Especially when it comes to physical copies. And so,
and you know, you're supporting your local shop. You're supporting people who are passionate about games, you know, preservationists, like, you know, it's, those are the people I want to support. So ultimately, George, to conclude this topic, I did pay $290 for Shining Force 3, of which PriceCharting.com listed about $400 as the rate because of what we just talked about, the scalpers, which are probably the same eight people, by the way, trading the same eight games back and forth to each other. It was a member of the Zophar's Realm community that was kind enough to sell me their personal copy. So I felt great knowing my $290, even though it's the most I've ever spent on a video game, never spent $290 on a video game before since. I felt really good knowing that it was going to a member of my community, and also that the money that I spent on it was coming from my community, right?
Exactly.
I took that money that I was cheered or subbed or gift subbed from the Twitch community, and I gave it back to another member of the Twitch community to play a game that's going to entertain the Twitch community. That to me, that makes all the sense in the world. I think it's fitting. I think it's closing the loop. It's closing the feedback loop.
Full circle. Full circle.
It's coming full circle. Exactly.
Yeah. So no, that makes total sense. And I completely agree. So, so Brad, where can people find you? Not that people can't find you, but where can people find you?
No worries. So my main vehicle right now is going to be through Twitch. You can come on to twitch.tv/Zophar1 and you can watch me stream. I stream 5 days a week, 4 nights I do, and I do RPGs. We were talking about how much I love RPGs earlier, and that just goes to like how much I love a story. And even though they take a lot longer to play, you know, RPGs, I mentioned earlier how I like to really spend that time with the plot and the characters. That's why I love Star Trek so much. So if you, and even if you're not into RPGs, if you just want to hang out, come say hi. I chat about all kinds of things while I'm playing the game. Sometimes I stop the game for a moment to catch myself up. So, you know, you come on in, you know, have some fun. We stream Mondays during the day, and then we stream Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays at night. I usually go 3 to 4 hours. So twitch.tv/Zophar1. And then I also am active on two points of social media. Mm-hmm. One is Twitter. I like to tweet, you know, thoughts sometimes about different topics. You can find me there. My name there is The Real Zophar. And I'm not saying every other Zophar is fake, by the way, but that's just somebody had already taken Zophar, so whatever. So The Real Zophar, all one word. And then I like to chat on Discord. So for those of you that might remember me from IRC days, I don't use IRC anymore because I believe the protocol is just, for me, it's very outdated and it's not very secure. Discord is much better when it comes to security and privacy. So you can catch me on Discord. If you come onto my Twitch channel, there's actually a link at the top where it says Discord. If you click on that, it will take you straight to my server. If you don't have the Discord app, that's okay. You can either download it or you can just go right through the browser. Both ways work. And it'll take you right to the Zophar's Realm channel. And we have, you know, server. And we have different channels for gaming, for Twitch. We have a Star Trek channel where I was just talking about this very topic about Picard on there. So come find me, Twitch, Twitter, and Discord. Those are the three.
So Brad, thank you for being on the podcast. Appreciate your time tonight. And visit www.gamersuplink.com for all the latest and greatest in news and information. This podcast will be available on most major podcasting platforms. And thank you very much for listening, and take care.
Thanks so much, George. Take care.
Take care.